The Web's Michael Smith. It is episode 175 of Kane's Cast, and you know what?
What's that?
Sometimes the predators are the prey.
See what you did there.
Thank you. Oh, actually, we have somebody to say that for me.
That's true.
Thank you.
There we go. Thanks to our good friend Brock McGinn. Friend of the podcast. See, he counts as a friend of the podcast.
He's a definite friend of the podcast.
Yeah, and also friends of the podcast are our friends at R&D Brewing, because they make Storm Brew amongst many other delicious, tasty beverages. But Storm Brew is, of course, the official sponsor of Kane's Cast at just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs per serving. It's the perfect brew for all occasions, especially Kane's home playoff games.
Yep.
Where a 16-ounce can of Storm Brew is only $5.
What a perfect way to quench your thirst and make sure that if you are able to drink responsibly, make sure that your voice will be ready to go at optimum levels for the playoffs. Because here we are. It was a condensed schedule. It was only 56 games, but
at times it felt like 82.
At times it felt like 12.
Yes, both are true at the same time.
And here we are.
And here we are. And the Carolina Hurricanes had one of their most successful seasons in franchise history, with a 36-12-8 record, 80 points in 56 games. The Carolina Hurricanes finish atop the Central Division standings. Something I don't think many people outside of Raleigh thought was possible, but when you talk to either of us, yep, when you talk to, really most importantly, the team in that locker room,
yep,
the belief was there that they could do it. And, you know, you've heard Rod Brindamore say it. He said it again today in his Zoom media availability. We await the first round schedule. That this is, you know, that part of the season is now over. Everybody starts fresh. And now the real journey begins. The Hurricanes worked all season to put themselves in this position, to have home ice through the first two rounds. Now the work begins towards their ultimate goal of winning the Stanley Cup.
And let's address a few things. Would it have been nice for the Hurricanes to have the best record in the league, and with that comes the President's Trophy? Sure. And I think you and I have talked about that, in particular because when you get to the semifinals, it goes by a reseed. So most points, best record, one seed. Fewest would be the four seed, one place four, and you always want to give yourself, and I will say this forever, the path of least resistance,
yeah,
to win a title, fine by me, because you know what? At the end of the day, it's still a title.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that you were looking at, but heading into the final three games since last we talked to you, you know, the Hurricanes had clinched the Central Division. They were the Central Division champs with eight games left to play.
Well, they had clinched a playoff spot.
Yeah, with eight games, and then they clinched the division with about four games left to play. So you can take a look at and see how just human nature, the grind of this season. Rod Brindamore said it after the game on Monday, the regular season finale against Nashville. You know, foot kind of came off the gas a little bit, which, honestly, I don't have a problem with how the Canes played all season long. You know, people would overreact to a loss here or an overtime loss there. I think it was the stat that Mike Sunheim put out a few days ago, the Canes PR and media services guru, which was until the last game of the season, the only time the Hurricanes trailed by three goals or more was once, and it was for 35 seconds. After Tampa scored an empty net goal in a 3-0 shutout win, what, back in February?
Yeah, the only other time the Hurricanes had lost consecutive games in regulation was that point in the season. Yep. So, it just goes to show you, you know, when Rod Brindamore said after the game on Monday that the Hurricanes played 56 regular season games and they were in 55 of them. Even the 11 they had lost in regulation, even the 8 they had lost in overtime. Obviously, you're in those games in overtime or the shootout because it's a as Brindamore says, it's the talent show at that point. It just goes to show you how competitive this team has been all season long. As if you needed, you know, another example for how competitive a team has been, you know, given that they won 36 games.
36, 80 12, points. And 8.
80 points in 56 games, better than some of the seasons this team has had, you know, in that decade-long playoff drought. 80 points in 56 games is really, when you put it in the context of best seasons in franchise history, is right up there with the 05-06 season.
There's going to be a banner that gets hung because they're Central Division champions for the first time ever. Yes, they have won a division before. They've won a division twice before, but first time in the Central Division.
First time since 05-06 that the team is division champs. Fourth time since becoming the Hurricanes. Fifth time in franchise history because the Whalers had a division championship. It's been a long time coming since this team was this dominant.
Yes.
And I think when you look at the past couple of seasons, you've kind of seen that trajectory building of – the pieces coming together from Rod Brind'Amour on down of just how good this team could be. And I think, losing in five games to the Boston Bruins in the bubble, with how unique that whole experience was, I think did leave some bad taste in the Hurricanes' mouths. And they wanted to come out and prove that they were ready to take that next step. And I think so far, that's what you've seen from the team. Now, of course, it's the real test is the playoffs.
What did Rod Brind'Amour say the goal of this organization is to be?
To be the best.
Well, it's taken 3 years, and they are now in that conversation is they're the best in the National Hockey League. So there's a lot of good to get to from this season. I don't let anything about the last three games play out. I don't know if you've gotten this question a lot, Michael, but I have since it's happened, which is, is there any concern? Don't you want to? Well, you want to win every game. When you hear the don't you want to question.
Yeah.
You want to win every single game.
That's the goal.
You play.
You play to win the game.
Thank you. That being said. Oh.
Thank you.
That being said, I don't think once you get to the playoffs, how you end the regular season really matters that much because the records reset to 0-0.
Yeah, well, especially too, when there's a week off in between games. I don't think much is going to carry over from those last two games to whenever the first game of this first round series is, whether it's Saturday, whether it's Sunday, whether it's Monday, whenever the NHL feels like announcing the schedule, they can do so. Please hurry up.
As of recording this, this Canes cast, yes.
So that time in between games, I don't think there's going to be much carryover from, those last two games in Nashville. Now, we can touch on those two real quickly. Of course, Saturday night, Nashville had to leave everything on the ice in order to clinch a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Dallas ended up losing their game, so they would have clinched anyway, but that's beside the point. They had to win to get in, and they did. And even still, even in playing, leaving everything out on the ice, the Hurricanes were a shot away from tying the game for most of the game. And so that's a positive I take out of that game. Monday, I've completely forgotten about, and I'm pretty sure the team has as well, aside from a few video pointers of, hey, maybe look out for this come game one, or we need to make sure we don't do this come game one. Aside from that, not much else to take away from a game that had very, very little tangible meaning in the standings.
All right. So let's play a couple of games. You ready? We're gonna call this, my God, is this bad for our team because.
Okay.
You've lost the last three games going into the Stanley Cup playoff.
0-2-1.
That means that you can't win in the playoffs. Then I point to 05-06, where, ironically, the last game of the regular season, the 05-06 team got shut out. Just so we can put that out there. Against a team that they would later on face in the playoffs.
And then they also lost the first two games of that first round series.
Yeah.
Let's hope that doesn't happen again.
So, you can worry about that, but we have positive history on the side.
Yes.
Let's go to the other side. Oh, are we going to be exhausted because we've had to play our minds out to get into the playoffs? Because I've heard that before, and the Carolina Hurricanes in just two seasons ago, they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. 08-09 had to do the exact same thing. They weren't tired. when they went through New Jersey and Boston to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So clearly that works. Now, of course, I've just laid out the scenario. Oh, isn't that the Nashville Predators? Well, you'd be worried if the Canes did it. Why shouldn't you be worried if the Predators are on a heater? Because a heater's got to come to an end at some time, right? Because that's your feeling if it's your team that's on the heater. I don't know why we always default to the worst case scenario.
Because we're humans and we're terrified of failure. Got really deep, but...
Yeah, you did.
That's probably... But I think, maybe what it boils down
look,
to.
Look, I'm in no way, shape, or form a motivational speaker. But folks, got to go positive. Look at the positive. And I think for this Canes team, they've been so resilient all year long that the last three games of the regular season don't matter. And to Michael Smith's point, there is such a long layoff now between Monday's regular season finale and whenever we start the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, that I don't even think the guys will remember that they played that game in Nashville. And then if people want to say, oh, the last two games against Nashville, do we throw out the first six?
Yeah, the first six were so dominant in terms of the Canes play. You know, maybe not. I know the Hurricanes won a couple of those games in overtime, but when you just look at those performances compared to the last two, I take a lot more from those first six games than I do the last two games, because there was something on the line for both teams in the first six games versus in the last two games, there really wasn't anything on the line for the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes had already clinched the Central Division the night before, actually, before that Saturday game. And by Monday, there was nothing on the line for either team except for Nashville wasn't going to let Pecorine go out, you know, getting shelled in what is possibly his last home game.
In the six games before we got to Saturday and Monday, the Canes outscored Nashville 23-9 in those six games. They were 6-0. And then in games that mean something, because I don't want to say that Monday's game didn't mean much.
It didn't.
It
did for, well,
The Canes could have had the best record in the NHL. There were things that...
Potentially.
There were things that there were meaning to it. Yeah. And
it was Joey Keane's NHL debut.
I don't think that games are always meaningless. But then you go into game number 8, and the total was 24-12. The Canes doubled them up in the scoreboard in 7 games on the scoreboard, too.
A lot of special teams, big special teams, especially in those first 6 games. It definitely, now,
that's the thing. When I bring this up, and I know I just cut you off there, like, I'm asking these.
You did.
I know.
And now I'm going to honk my horn at you.
As well you should. Well, how are you going to honk your horn? Do you have gas?
Well, that's a whole nother thing. Huh?
But I ask this, and I like that you gave the answer, we're human, but I ask this with all these scenarios, and if you're going to say, well, the last two games, so you throw out the first six?
Yeah.
Like, I just want to know where... What should we look at then? Like, if we're going into this series, what are the most important, what are the crucial pieces to this? And we will talk with Brooks Bratton about this and get the Nashville Predators' perspective on this.
And we'll also talk with Jeff Daniels and get the Carolina Hurricanes' perspective on this. So I think this discussion, unless you have anything else to add, just tees up a nice series preview. Should we go with Brooks first or should we go with JD?
Let's go with the home ice advantage and talk with Jeff Daniels.
Well, we welcome in assistant coach Jeff Daniels to Canes Cast. JD, how's it going?
Everything's good. You know, enjoying a couple of days here before all the fun starts.
Yeah, exactly. I know Rod Brindamore was asked this today. Is it tough not knowing yet, you know, when game one is? Does that affect schedules much, or is there kind of a plan in place already?
I mean, there's a plan in place, obviously, not knowing the exact day. In reality, it probably just means one extra day of practice. On occasions, it'll probably be Sunday or Monday from what I've heard, and which will just add a day of practice and prep. And, you know, and most importantly, I think another day of rest for the guys, because like any team this time of year, that it's been a grind all year, and we've made it through, and now we got to make sure we're rested and healthy and ready to go for the next month and a half or so.
With this year, because of how compressed it was, and especially I've got to imagine the last month and a half, there was hardly any practice time for the coaching staff. Is this actually welcome that you don't get right to the playoffs? You actually have time to coach the team up a little bit before you head into this first round series with Nashville?
Yeah, I think it's huge. Like I said, first, you know, the rest is huge, but also, like you said, you know, we have not practiced at all, especially the last, like, you know, month or so. You throw an odd day in there, and if you do practice, it's maybe 30 minutes. So I think, you know, the plan going forward here, you know, tomorrow and Friday, we have a couple good hard days of practice, and just kind of almost treat it as like a mini training camp and just kind of touching all our systems, you know, work on the power play, work on the PK, just make sure the guys are ready and we know what we need to do against Nashville.
Jeff, you've been through this as a player, as an assistant coach, as a head coach in the AHL, trying to, you know, win a championship. Is there any, I mean, I know the perfect thing is you win every game and you're at your peak, but does what a team does the last, I don't know, 7-8 games of the season, is there any carryover into the playoffs for a team like that?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, you know, you want to feel good about your game going into the playoffs, and obviously, you know, I think you throw the last couple games out the window just based on, you know, the lineups we kind of dressed. But I think, you know, prior to that, you know, playing Chicago and Columbus, I thought we were okay. And part of that was just maybe us taking, you know, the other teams lightly. But I think, you know, once the puck dropped against Nashville, we know what we're in for. I think it was a good couple of games in Nashville to kind of give us a sense what we're going to see. And the intensity was picked up, so it's going to be like playoff hockey that we played those last two games. So it was a good wake-up call for us, and I think now we know what to expect, and we'll be ready to go.
One of the benefits, obviously, as you mentioned, of this time in between the regular season and the playoffs is the chance to practice, but also, you know, some injuries kind of piled up there towards the end of the season, just some various nicks and bruises from just the physical tolls of a compact schedule. Is it going to be, I guess, refreshing, you know, in a sense, when you get to look at the lineups you're putting together and potentially have really a full complement of players to choose from?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's we're no different from any other team right now. It's, like you said, it's been a grind. Teams are battling injuries, and guys are banged up at our plan. But like you said, I think coming into that first game and whatever that may be, I think we might be pretty close to 100% healthy going in and into that. And with that comes, you know, some tough decisions on who gets in that first game and who has to watch. But it's a good problem to have. But I think, you know, the guys are going to be focused, ready to go. And I think, like you said, once the playoffs start, you know, those injuries and, you know, you're going to be banged up for the next month and a half, 2 months. So it's something that the guys have been used to. It's been like playoff hockey all year, playing every other night. So the guys are ready for the grind.
Jeff, you run the forwards. So to that end, how valuable has it been this year that you know the depth that you have up front, and if you need to mix up lines, you know that there are combinations you like that you can put together? And not only that, guys stepped up when you asked them to. What does that do for a coaching staff, knowing you have that depth with your forward group heading into, as you know, the ultimate grind of the NHL playoffs?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, obviously, you know, you got your star players, and you know those guys are crucial to your team, but you do need that depth where, you know, if one line gets shut down, we have other options. I mean, you look out throughout the year with, you know, just look at the Trocheck line for majority of the year. They've been a line that, you know, produced consistently all year. If you know, Aho line wasn't going, or Svech wasn't going, or Jor, whoever, we had those three lines, and even our fourth line can grind it out and chip in some goals. So I think it's huge. As you said, come playoff time, it's like any other year that you're always going to get scoring, or you need scoring throughout your lineup. You just can't rely on one or two guys, and I think we had that this year. We're able to produce offensively up front, and we got guys in the back end that can, obviously Dougie Hamilton and guys like that can produce offensively from the back end, which is just a benefit to our forward group.
You've played on playoff teams, Jeff, especially ones like the Carolina Hurricanes in 02, who went very deep in the playoffs, making a run to the Stanley Cup Finals. What is it about locker rooms, you know, four teams like that, that just feel special?
Well, I think you need a group of guys that are all in it together. They've all bought in. They all have that one common goal. They don't care who gets the credit. They just want to, you know, be that last team standing, so to speak. And I think we have a group of guys that are eager to get going and want a chance at, you know, to lift the Stanley Cup. I think we only maybe have a couple guys who've done it. So I think it's for those guys, you don't know how long you're going to play in this game, and any chance you have an opportunity to, you know, make a run for it, you want to take advantage of it. So I think we have a group of guys that are hungry and, you know, they're ready for the challenge coming up. You know, it's definitely not going to be easy. We know that right from game one, but I think the guys are excited.
Looking at, you know, the season series between the Hurricanes and the Predators, you know, we talk a lot about the first six games of the series because those seem to be, I think, more applicable to what we might see in the playoffs versus those last two just because of, you know, the situations at Nashville having to win to get in and the Hurricanes having clinched the Central Division and all of that. When you look back at the season series against this team, what did the Hurricanes do well, especially in those first six games, to win all of those six games?
Well, I think it was really no different than the other team we were playing against. You know, it's always been about us. That's been Roddy's main, you know, message, you know, for the last couple of years. It's about us, and obviously we recognize and respect the other team, and we kind of have an idea what they do, but unless we're playing our game, we don't have a chance. We really stress playing our game, and when we played Nashville, like you said, those six games is about playing fast, you know, getting pucks deep, you know, getting pucks below the goal line and working teams down low and, you know, just trying to outwork the other team. And I think that's what we're going to have to do. That's the mindset we're going to have going into these playoffs. We know Nashville, you know, they're a team that, you know, they've battled a lot of stuff throughout the season, injuries and COVID and all that kind of stuff. And now they're healthy. And now you're kind of seeing the team that they was projected going into the season. So it'll be a good test. You know, they're going to come out, be physical and try to play a heavy game. And that's where we got to make sure we're doing those things. And like I said earlier, getting pucks deep and not trying to be cute with the puck. We can't afford to turn pucks over the neutral zone. We got to play our game, which, like I said, get pucks deep, get on the forecheck, and get pucks to the net.
Jeff, when you look back on this season, and it was so different, so odd, you didn't have the usual time together with the team that you have. Can you look back on this and say this grind will get us ready for the playoffs, or this was so unique that you just got to kind of park it where it was in this regular season, and it maybe isn't helpful for anybody going into the playoffs the way that this year was?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's in the same situation, right? So it's been the schedule's been the same for everyone. But I think this last, whatever, 3-4 months, it's been like playoff hockey. Just because, like I said, you're playing every other day. There's not a lot of practice time. You know, you're playing in a city. You're playing the team back-to-back in a city as opposed to just flying in, flying out. So a lot of things kind of are similar to the playoff type of game. And I think, as I said earlier, we're used to it. The guys are used to it. They know what to expect. They know the grind is going to be every other day. They're going to be banged up. They're going to have to play hurt. And it's just, as I said earlier, it's something that you got to buy into and be willing to pay the price to if you want to be the last team standing.
And as you mentioned, getting pucks in deep, so key, especially in a series like this. When you look at what Nashville's defense can do, how important is it to make them go 200 feet if they're going to try to go the other way and not give them anything cheap to get out of their own zone?
Well, it's huge. As I said, you know, we got to make sure when we do get pucks deep and we're getting on the forecheck, just to make sure we finish our check. Because they have some D that, you know, Yossi and Ellis and those guys at home, they want to get up on the play. So if we can make their job a little tougher and kind of slow them down, will benefit us. And as I said earlier, we're at our best when we're getting pucks below the goal line and using our cycle game and, you know, getting pucks up top and getting pucks to the net. And that's the big reason why we've had success this year by playing that game. And now is not a time to change it. We got to keep buying into that type of game.
Special teams is so often a difference in the game. Do you foresee that being the case in the playoffs as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it starts off, you got to be disciplined, right? You got to play whistle to whistle. You can't afford to give a team 4 or 5 power play opportunities. So that part's going to have to be huge, the discipline part. And when we do get a power play, and, you know, might be only 1 or 2 a game, we got to make sure we capitalize on that. And the same thing on the other side of things. When we're on the PK, and we got to make sure that, you know, focus on getting the kill and not worry about trying to create offense. It's just about getting the kill and make sure we can kill those 2 minutes and get back to 5-on-5.
And speaking of discipline, do you feel like any of the last two games of the season is going to carry over into the playoff series, or is it more of, you know, the time between that and game one is enough for really nothing to carry over into game one?
Yeah, I don't think it. I mean, I think if we didn't play Nashville those last two games, I think they're still going to come out and play that same type of game.
Yeah.
You know, it's playoff hockey. You got to be willing to grind. You got to be physical. But at the same time, you got to be disciplined. As I said, I think, going in, you got to make sure you don't want to cross the line. You want to, stay in your ground. You want to pay the price in front of the net, all those little things you hear all the time. But at the same time, when the whistle goes, we can't make sure we're not giving that extra punch or cross check after the whistle, which you saw, the last couple of games. And I think, from their standpoint too, I think they're going to play the same way, but they're going to try to be disciplined too, because they don't want to, see our power play, four or five times a game. So it's about being physical and just make sure you're not crossing the line.
Michael and I were talking about this before we got you on the podcast here, Jeff. The funny thing to me is how people worry about, if you're red hot going into the playoffs, oh, is that, that could be a bad thing because it's got to end. If you're cold going into the playoffs, that could be a bad thing. As I'm going to ask you, it's the same question, but I need you to answer it as a player and then as a coach. So as the coach first, you worry about everything going into the playoffs, right, as a coach?
Exactly. You probably over-worry. You overanalyze, overthink, what happened this last game is, like you said, is it going to carry over? As a player, you're just more focused. Okay, it's the last game. Let's get it over with. The fun really starts next week. So I think it's a different mindset. I think it's easy for the players to kind of get away from it and move on, where coaches, it kind of lingers with you 24/7. And, when you're winning, everything's good, and you're losing, you're stressed out. But I think, that's a different probably mindset between a player and a coach, be able to kind of step away from it. But I think, you can't really tie in. It's no different than we always joke about, a morning skate. You look great in a morning skate, and all of a sudden you go out at night and you lay an egg, or vice versa. The guy can't make a pass in the morning. All of a sudden we play our best game of the year. So you can't really, tie it together. It's just, as I said, we're focused, and this is our focus is going to be this week, is just making sure we're sharp and on top of the way we want to play. And as I said, we know what Nashville's going to do, but we got to make sure we play our game to give ourselves the best chance to win.
Yeah, you kind of answered a little bit, but I was going to ask Jeff Daniels, the player, did you ever know the record of the team that you were going, what you guys did in the regular season against who you played in the playoffs, unless a coach or somebody told you this was what your record was?
I think you had an idea how you did against the team. I think this year's a little different. Yeah. It's eight times.
Yeah.
Normally you're playing a team four times. You're going, I think we won a couple times. Then we lost a couple. Eight games, you kind of might have to do a little thinking to remember what it was. But again, you throw those games out the window now. It's every team's kind of starting from scratch again. And everyone's, you look at the standings or playoff, everyone's 0-0, right? So it's got to be our mindset. We know that they're a different team now than they were during the year, and we know that we got to bring them, as good as we worked throughout the year, we got to make sure we get to another level.
What makes this time of year so special? I don't know if there's a simple answer to that, Jeff, but I'm always fascinated as to why this is such a great time to watch hockey, to be around it and be involved with it.
Well, I think, as a player or coaching or a fan, you're almost there, right? You're down to 16 teams now, So everyone has a chance now. And as I said, it's just the grind of the game. I keep repeating that, but it's just like every other day is just, right back at it. And when you're able to be that last team standing, excited as you are, you're tired, you're beat up, but you pay the price to get there and to win. And that's what, as I said, everyone wants a chance to raise that cup in that final game, but they know it takes a lot of sacrifice and a lot to do it. And also, I think it's huge. It's just to stay even keel. You can't get down too low if you lose a game, because you got to bounce back, the day after and be ready to go again. So you got to have a short term memory, not only with the game but within the game. If you have a bad shift, let's make sure we respond, or give up a goal early, let's make sure we respond. We'll get it right back. So it's exciting. I mean, I've always said it's an emotional roller coaster. You can get real high, it crashes down real quick, but it's not a better feeling.
But because of that, this year, is home ice advantage maybe more important than, say, other years going into the playoffs?
That's a tough one. It's different because of the, as we've all experienced with Carolina here, when we're in the playoffs and this building's packed, there's not a louder building out there in the league. So it's going to be a little different that way, not having a packed house, and that crowd is definitely, the guys kind of feel that and feed off that. But I think to always have that extra game at home, I think we're comfortable in our building, comfortable playing, you know, with the fans we get in their building. So I think it's definitely an advantage. You'd rather play that, you know, the X's game at home. But I think, you know, hopefully we can make a run at it. We get more people in the building because I know that building gets rocking when we're going.
Yeah, it's the most wonderful time of the year. We can't wait for this playoff series to get going between the Hurricanes and Predators. So Jeff Daniels joining us here on Canes Cast. JD, thanks for your time today.
Hey, anytime, guys. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Jeff Daniels making his long-awaited debut appearance on this podcast.
Yeah, I am a little disappointed in us.
Yes, me too. But it's been 175 episodes.
What a time to get him on.
Yeah, there's no better time, really.
It is. I agree with you. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, and, you know, this is what everyone plays for. This is what, you know, these 56 games that the Hurricanes played. I mean, you've heard Rod Brindamore say it. This is this is when, you know, the real fun begins. Yeah. The real work begins to make your ultimate goal a reality. You had to grind for those 56 games. But now the games really matter.
I'm glad that we got JD on, as he is affectionately known, or the difference, or the veteran, as Shane Willis would call him, that we got him on this episode, because here's a guy who's played it, who's coached it, who knows about the value of going in. And for me, it's always, it's a hindsight's 2020 question. Like, oh, did losing games down the stretch cost you? Well, if you lose, yes, you can say yes, it did. But if you win, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a question we'll answer after the first round.
Yeah, exactly. So, and speaking of the first round, Michael, let's get a look at the first round opponent. Let's head to Nashville. He is a good man, and he'll be a friend for the podcast for now. And then after this, what does he become?
An enemy.
Okay.
A total enemy.
Glad you said that. Let's let's get a little bit of the Nashville Predator perspective with Brooks Bratton.
All right, we're happy to welcome in Brooks Bratton, the Senior Communications and Content Coordinator for the Nashville Predators and co-host of the Predators official podcast. Brooks, welcome to Canes Cast. How are you doing here on this fine Wednesday?
Gentlemen, it's great to be here. I'm doing quite well. It's a beautiful day in Nashville, Tennessee, and the playoffs are around the corner. So it's, of course, always the best time of year, contrary to Ben Crosby talking about Christmas time. I think this is it.
I have to agree there, and we're all looking forward to the Hurricanes and Predators' first ever matchup in the playoffs. What can you tell us about this Predators team? Because it's a team that maybe started a little slow, but in the last couple of months of the regular season, really was able to surge up the standings.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been a tale of two seasons, honestly. It was preached at the beginning of the season that the Predators were going to be a harder team, a tougher team to play against, maybe a more physical team, maybe a little more will than skill. And it just, for whatever reason, did not start out that way. And there were certainly good signs in the early going in those first couple of months, but there were also a lot of games that I think were just head scratchers for head coach John Hines and his staff and general manager David Poyle, wondering, you know, what was going on and why aren't players producing like we thought they would. And then all of a sudden, we went into a franchise record 8-game, 16-day road trip. And at that point, it was the beginning of March. And at that juncture, it was kind of like, all right, this is the season. Either something gets figured out on this road trip, or, you know, you're not making the playoffs and you're probably trading some players at the trade deadline. And slowly but surely, the Predators started playing the way that I think a lot of people thought they were capable of doing. And it really is remarkable. They finished with points in 21 of their last 28 games, a run of 27-1, which is just, I mean, you guys know, is remarkable at any stage of hockey, but especially in the National Hockey League, where every team is so good and anybody is capable of winning at any point. It really has been a remarkable turnaround, and there's a lot of confidence right now, and it's hard not to have that when you've seen what the team has been able to do. And it's just really been quite remarkable, and I've never seen anything like it in my 7 seasons here, that's for sure.
All right, Brooks, make the case why the Predators can stay on this heater that they're on.
Well, I just think there's a whole new level of confidence for one, and two, you talk about, and John Hines has mentioned it a lot lately about, he's been very big on identity, and this team needed to find an identity, and they've found that, and what that is just simply being what they thought they were going to be all along, which is a relentless team, hard on the forecheck, all the cliches they play against, but that's what they are. That's what they were built to do, and that's what they're doing right now. And I think one of the bigger things that has really come to the forefront in the last couple of months, honestly, is just this team buying into the way that they need to play to be successful. And they realize what that is. It's not going to be one guy necessarily driving the bus or stealing the show every night, although UC Saros has done that in goal many times in the last couple of months. But this team has simply found that cohesion that they need to be successful. And more often than not, they've shown that they are now capable of playing the way that they need to simply win hockey games and find success. And I think that's what's been the biggest factor as of late, is nobody's doing anything out of the ordinary. They're not doing anything they're not supposed to. It's just a simple fact of the matter that they're playing good, solid, cohesive hockey, and they're finding results because of it. And so there's no reason, at least in our minds here, I think, to believe that that can't continue. We know how good of a team Carolina is, and I think it's going to be a heck of a matchup. And just as this team looks to continue to move forward, there's certainly a lot more confidence right now than there was earlier on.
If you're in that coach's room with John Hines getting ready for this series, what do you think he's telling his staff, or he's going to tell the players, this is the biggest concern for us against this Hurricanes team? What do you look at and say, this is what we have to stop Carolina from doing?
Well, I just think, and we've seen it throughout the season, and you guys know, of course, but I, to me, like, the offensive capability of your club, I mean, just going into Carolina and not only got from guys like Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov and Trocheck, but I feel like as you go on down the lineup too, and of course Jordan Staal's been great, and Dougie Hamilton's had a great season, and I just think that the offensive capability of the Hurricanes, I think, is certainly something to highlight. Goaltending, and you guys know, I mean, all it takes in the playoffs is a hot goaltender, and a team that was supposed to be done in one round can all of a sudden find themselves, you know, in a conference final at least. And so UC Saros is going to have to be really good. He's been really good, but he's going to have to continue to do that. And I think for the Predators, it's just playing smart in your own end. And John Hines is a very detail-oriented coach. That's been a theme of his since he came on, I guess, back all the way back in January 2020, which seems like a lifetime ago. But the moment he came in, he said, we have got to pay better attention to details and what we're doing, particularly in our own end. And I think that's been another improvement as the season has gone along. So for me, I think that'll be one of, if not the biggest keys for the Predators, if they're able to hang with Carolina, is really limiting those chances in their own end and simply playing smart hockey and not making mistakes, not turning the puck over, not allowing Carolina to capitalize on their chances. And they're probably going to need UC Saros to bail them out a time or two as well. So for me, I think that's the biggest thing, is trying to limit Carolina's big guns. Because as you guys know, I mean, there's a lot of guys in your lineup that are capable of producing, and we've certainly seen that this season.
For sure. Aside from UC Saros, and I do think the goaltenders, obviously when it comes to playoff time, are some of the most important players to a team's success. But who's maybe a predator or two that Hurricanes fans should keep an eye on in this series? Someone who could potentially make a difference here.
I believe Michael is referring to the hockey player, not the aliens that,
yes,
you know, with the Schwarzenegger and all. Just for clarification.
Or the prehistoric creatures.
That is also correct, yeah. So I'm sorry, I just wanted to throw that in there. So
No, I appreciate the clarification. You never know if things can get off the rails quickly. I think, as you mentioned, I mean, Saros is going to be very important. A guy that's been awesome since coming back from injury a few weeks ago for the Preds is Luke Cunnan. And he's a player that's really found his game. The Predators acquired him in the offseason from Minnesota in exchange for Nick Bonino, and kind of course, an up-and-coming young player and a guy that has a little bit of everything in his game. And he was just one of the many players on this roster that, you know, admittedly had a tough start. And he has really come on strong and I think become the player that David Poile and the Predators thought they were getting when they acquired him. And he does a little bit of everything. He scored some really timely goals. We saw him score two goals in that Saturday game against Carolina that clinched the playoffs for the Predators. And not only that, he's a physical player. He can play in all situations. So I think he's been really good. And another guy that you guys are familiar with, Eric Halla, has also played some solid hockey down the stretch. And of course, if you're the Predators, you're going to look to your big guns like Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene. But you guys know as well as anyone that you need depth, especially in the playoffs. You need some goals from guys that maybe you expected a little bit, but aren't the first names that come to mind. And so I think those two players, and Cunning and Halla, have been really good. And then Nashville's fourth line as well. We've kind of nicknamed it the herd line in a way, just by the way that they usually start the game. They set the tone for John Hines, and they're a herd in the sense that they're going to run at you, and they're probably going to lay a big hit in the first shift, or they're going to create a scoring chance, or they're going to do something to really set that tone. And playoff hockey, it's going to be tough. It's going to be physical. We saw that in those two games in Nashville. Things got a little testy at times. And so Nashville's fourth line has consisted of some combination of Colton Sissons, Yakov Trenin, and Tanner Jeannot usually, and Matthew Olivier was in there on that Monday night as well. Those are the kind of players that really seem to step up in the playoffs. And so that line in particular, if you want to look at a line in a particular unit, is going to be really important for Nashville in this series.
Brooks, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think when you look at the Predators roster, our eyes will always go to Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene just because of where they were drafted, what their reputations are. But if I asked you, would I be wrong in saying that the Kelly Yarncroke, Michael Granlund, and Luke Cunning line has been the best line for this Preds team during this stretch where they've gotten hot, gotten into this, and what makes that trio work so well together?
I would agree with you. That is, I think, overall, as you said, they've been the most consistent trio together. One, just because simply they've been healthy for a little while now. Going into Monday's game, they had combined for 24 points in Nashville's last nine games. So it's clear to see the production there. Kelly Yarncroke has really had a breakout season, and not in the sense that, you know, we didn't think that he was capable of producing offensively, but just the consistency that he's had. He's always been a smart player and a player that's relied upon in all areas of the ice, but wasn't necessarily one of the first guys that you think of to put the puck in the net. And he's really been great in that way this season. We talked about Luke Cunning a moment ago, and then Mikhail Granlund, a guy who everybody thought he had moved on. And a few days before Christmas, all of a sudden, he comes back to Nashville on a one-year deal. And what a signing that ended up being for David Poile. He ended up leading the team in goals with 13. And, I mean, those are 13 huge goals that I don't know that you would have gotten this season if he doesn't come back. So, yeah, that trio has been really good. And as you said, I mean, that top line with Johansson and Forsberg, Eli Tolvanen's been up there a lot. Matt Duchene was with Johansson and Forsberg on Monday. So that is always a dangerous trio no matter who is there. But, yeah, that second line, there's really been a lot of consistency there. And, you know, if the first line isn't getting it done or the third line can't chip in, that second line, more often than not, they're going to find a way to make something happen.
Brooks, you mentioned the season finale, the two-game set between these two teams in Nashville, and I want to touch on a couple of things from those two games. One, the atmosphere was incredible, and they're going to be even more fans at Bridgestone Arena for playoffs. So what sort of advantage can that provide the Predators, even though they don't have home ice advantage? And then two, Pekka Rinne and possibly his final home game. Just can you put into words, you know, what that shutout performance meant for him and the Predators organization?
Sure. Well, first on the fans, yeah. So the Predators have come to an agreement with the city of Nashville and the National Hockey League to have over 12,000 fans in Bridgestone Arena starting for game three of the playoffs, which is right around 70% capacity, which, I mean, normally for a playoff game, obviously, you know, things would be standing room only. But I think what we've been through in the last year plus, to go from not having any fans in the building to having some fans to having, I mean, we've had 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans the last few games in the building, and it has almost seemed like a full building because you're used to not having hardly anybody in there. And the television timeout, the standing O that happens organically, it's happened for years and years here in Nashville. I mean, that provides a huge boost to guys. And so I think when they, no matter what happens in Carolina, when the Predators come back home for game three and step inside Bridgestone and you'll have over 12,000 people, that can make a world of difference. I mean, in that run of the Stanley Cup final in 2017, I think the Preds were something along the lines of 9-1 or 10-1 at home. And I mean, you guys know it's kind of the same thing at PNC Arena, but when Bridgestone gets rocking, it's one of the loudest buildings in the league. And so I think that can make a difference come playoff time. And so we're excited to see what that looks like. And then you mentioned that 5-0 shutout for Pekka on Monday night. I mean, what a moment. And for a guy who just means so much to this city organization, he's not only is he the best player in franchise history, he's also the most beloved player in franchise history. I always joke with people that in a way to say how nice he is, I always say, like, I'm convinced that I could sneeze on Pekka and he would apologize for standing too close to me. I mean, it's just, he's just the nicest, most humble, down-to-earth guy. And he's in the final year of his contract. UC Saros, of course, has been the guy. We've seen that transition, that handoff, if you will. And for Pek to get one last game, potentially, at least this season, in the regular season, to get one last game at Bridgestone Arena, a 5-0 shutout, as you said. I mean, it's just the stuff that, you know, I feel like that's what you watch sports for. You watch sports for the big victories, and you watch it for the stories of the people that you come to know and love, and you feel like you're part of their family. And to see him get that recognition, and again, we don't know. I mean, he said that he has not made any decisions on his future, but if that was it, he was like, yeah, that was a pretty good way to go out. And, it was really something to see. I'm really glad for him that he got that recognition. And as John Hines said after the game, he's like, you know what? He's not done here. We've got a playoff series coming up, and whether he's on the ice or on the bench, Pekka is still the most respected player in that locker room. And even if it's on the bench and he doesn't see a minute of ice in this series, he still plays in a hugely important role for this team.
Yeah, Brooks, it's always amazing to me how that seems to happen in the sports world. You know, this is player X's last game. He either gets a goal, in this case, a shutout for Pekka Rinne in his 60th of his career. He ties Tom Barrasso for 19th and wins. It's like everything lines up in those situations. And I want to go back to something you talked about with Michael about the home ice advantage. In this series, how big do you think that's the deciding factor, that the team that can get that one game on the other club's ice, that's what's going to tilt this series more than anything?
It could, and not to go back again to the Nashville example of 2017, but of course the Predators were the eighth seed, the eighth and final seed in the Western Conference, and they go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. But they won those first three series, of course, starting on the road. They took game one on the road in all three of those opening series. And that was huge because obviously for Nashville, they were going to have to win at least one on the road, right? And so for me, that could be a huge factor. And as we said, I mean, both buildings are ours and yours, two of the loudest in the NHL. I think even with limited capacities, I still think the atmospheres will probably be unreal. And, you know, that could give you a boost. We saw it on Saturday night in Nashville. It's a scoreless game in the second period, and the fans get going. They love the way the team's playing, and they give them a standing ovation throughout the entire television timeout. And 30 seconds later, the puck's in the back of the net with Luke Cunningham getting his first of the night. So those are things that can happen. from time to time, and it really, I think in the playoffs too, it that home advantage can really make a difference if you can get the crowd on your side and really get them going. I'll never forget the quote from Ken Hitchcock when he was coaching the Blues and talked about coming into Nashville on a Saturday night is like going into the Coliseum in Rome, and you just pray that you can get out unscathed. And you know, obviously it matters most what happens on the ice, but certainly don't discount what the fans and the energy and the atmosphere could bring to a team, especially on the road, if they get into a little trouble and that home crowd is able to take over on either side.
Yep, it should be a lot of fun. It's been enjoyable to play in the same division this year in the Central. I would petition to keep this division, but I don't really think we have much pull in the National Hockey League.
I mean, we could make some revisions. We could send Chicago and Dallas back to the Central.
Sure, and we'll figure it out. We'll get Gary on the phone,
sure,
and hammer something out.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
You know what? I love coming to Raleigh. I think it's one of the more underrated places, and just travel. Michael, when we were catching up on Monday night, I was saying how nice it was to not have to make a 5.5-hour flight to Vancouver this season. Although Vancouver, as we all know, probably the best road city in the NHL, it's worth it.
Yeah.
But still, from a travel perspective and just forming some new rivalries, it's been great. And obviously we'd never get to even play each other in the playoffs unless it was in the finals. So this is kind of cool to get a new little rivalry out of all this as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to put a little Central bias slant on the end of this, which is, I think the way this division shaped up, I'm going to be very surprised if when we get to the finals, one of the teams left standing is not from the Central. When you look at the four teams that are left, and I know we're biased with who we cover and who you cover, but I really expect the team that makes it out of the Central to get to the Stanley Cup final. You have that same vibe?
Yeah, I don't doubt that whatsoever. I mean, you guys know how good Florida and Tampa have been as well this season, and we've certainly had our share of tough games against all three of those top three teams, and I think it became pretty clear early on that it was going to be Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay, some order of that at the top of the division, and it was that battle for fourth, of course, that we were able to prevail and find our way in, and anything could happen, but no, I agree. I mean, I just think some of the best teams in the entire league right now are in this temporary Central Division. And it would not surprise me. Although, I don't know if Florida and Tampa Bay, whoever makes it out of that series might be too beaten up to make something else happen. But who knows? I mean, that's why it's so entertaining. And I think we've got a great group of teams here in the postseason. And hockey's alive and well in the South, and I love to see it. I think, you guys in a market like that, and for us over here, it's I would like to think that we're no longer thought of as non-traditional markets. I think we're well past that, and we've certainly established ourselves. But it's still cool to get some extra attention at this time of year, and I think everybody down here certainly deserves it.
That's so true. And I think we're in store for an exciting playoff matchup between the Nashville Predators and the Carolina Hurricanes. He is Brooks Bratton. You can follow him on Twitter at Brooks Bratton. He's a senior communications and content coordinator for the Nashville Predators and co-host of the Predators official podcast, which you can listen to wherever you listen to fine podcasts. Brooks, thanks for joining us today. And we look forward to seeing you here in Raleigh for game one of the first round.
Thanks, guys. I look forward to it, and hope we can do this again soon sometime if we don't end up despising each other in the next couple weeks.
Well, after this phone call, I really have no more use for you, Brooks, until next season. So,
deal. Fair enough. We'll take the summer to steam everything off, and then we'll get back together sometime.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us, Brooks.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Brooks Bratton from the Nashville Predators.
Who I is now no longer in my...
No longer a friend of the
no
podcast.
No longer a friend of the podcast.
Great stuff. Yeah, he also hosts the Preds official podcast. So if you want their perspective on the series, I think they'll be recording an episode later in the week.
Are they bringing you on? Are they bringing me on?
I think we might be on. If not, then we know who to call.
Exactly. Well, we've got... See, we did our due diligence. We went behind enemy lines.
Yeah, we did. We did a nice pre-scout, a podcast pre-scout. Pre-scout is always kind of weird because scouting is doing things beforehand.
Sure.
So pre-scout's kind of repetitive.
The pre-scout, though, is this is what we're going to look at before we actually go out and look at them.
I guess so.
There's ways to it. Oh, also there's this.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Playoff edition. I know a lot's being made of home ice advantage, so I ask you, when they finally drop the puck in the series, and hopefully we know sometime this week when that happens, as we heard Jeff Daniels say, maybe Sunday, maybe Monday. Again, the coaching staff going into the recording of this podcast still hadn't gotten the official word. But when this series shifts from Raleigh to Nashville, the Hurricanes will be up 2-0 in the series.
I'll take it. Yeah, sure. Let's
that's a softball.
Let's be optimistic here.
Yeah.
All right, well then here's mine.
What?
The Hurricanes will defeat the Predators in 5 games or fewer.
You know, I brought this up to a couple of people and I've gotten a few different answers. Somebody thinks that this will go 6. 6 seems right, but I'm going to go with 5. I'm going to take it.
I like 5, yeah.
I like 5. Canes will wrap it up here in game 5.
Yeah, 5's good. 4 would be even better.
Oh, I would take 4 all day.
Really? I mean, any way you slice it.
It doesn't matter. Just 4 wins is all that matters.
That's all that matters.
But, yeah, there's something in the back of my head that 5 games is right. The X factors in this series, to me, for Nashville, it's UC Soros.
Yeah. As Brooks pointed out,
yeah.
and that's really going to be the key, I think, for Nashville to really, I think, hang with the Hurricanes in this series. UC Soros is going to need to play large.
Yeah, and for me, the X factor for the Canes, let me know if this is nebulous, but it's special teams.
Yeah.
If the Canes' power play and penalty kill are as effective against Nashville as they were in the regular season,
yeah.
This could be a quick series.
Yeah, I agree. And really, you just look at, again, the body of work that the Hurricanes had, not only against the Nashville Predators in the first 6 games of that season series, but just all season long. And it's just tough to imagine, this team not being as dominant as we've seen them this year.
Agreed.
I mean, it's just the talent level, the work ethic, to me, it's all there.
And I think a huge advantage, we've hit on this a couple of times here on this episode, the time off to rest, yeah, to recover, and to, as Rod Brindamore said, get practices back where you can pick up and push the tempo of the team again to get it to where it needs to be. We heard Jeff Daniels say it's basically a mini training camp that goes on right now. All of these things that the Canes respond well to. I actually think the wait in between is better for the Hurricanes than it is for Nashville. Because if you're Nashville, you've just won 2 games against Carolina. Let's get right back on the ice and play 2 more. Right. If you're the Canes, those games, yeah, we wanted to win. You never go into a game not caring about the outcome. We wanted to win, but okay.
Oh, well.
Now you park it.
Yeah, exactly. And
those games might as well have happened last year by the time we get to game 1 of the first round.
It's a total separation. And for the Predators, I think, you're right, and as Brooks pointed out, their record down the stretch of the season, they want to keep it rolling right into the playoffs. Yeah. So I do think this week of rest and practice and refocus probably benefits the Hurricanes.
One concern, and normally I would take this as my own, but Trip Tracy, my partner, said it on the air, and I agree with him. So we credit Trip and the huge Caniac that Trip Tracy is. He didn't like in that last game that Matt Duchene scored 2 goals and Ryan Johansson got a goal and was on the power play, because these were 2 guys who did not have the best of regular seasons.
Yeah.
Or regular season, because people like to say this is what it was.
Yeah, they each had it's a fine. Regular season.
So it's seasons for each other.
Regular season.
Sure, whatever. That they scored, and maybe they all of a sudden take this week off feeling really good about themselves. And those are difference makers up front that they can be. At least they're paid to be those guys for Nashville.
They are paid to be them.
Oh, and that's why. So that's the one concern going into it.
All right, well, let's check the voicemail line.
Oh, yes. Well, wait a minute. How do you call the voicemail line?
Oh, yeah, I guess we should point that out.
I think you should. It's 919-500, and then
Stephen Lorenz, Dougie Hamilton.
Bang.
78-19 for those that aren't up to date with their roster numbers.
919-500-7819. 919-500, Stephen Lorenz, Dougie Hamilton.
And our thanks to John, I believe it was,
who
recommended that. So stick taps to you, John.
My name is John DeLargy. I'm a huge Kaniac fan since they won the Stanley Cup. My big question is, what are the Canes going to do to hold on to the folks that they need to repeat? And who are those folks that they need to hold on to repeat with regard to the Seattle Kraken and the expansion draft and things? How do they get through that? Who do they want to hold on to? I hope to hear from you soon. Take care. Bye.
Well, obviously they want to hold on to everybody.
Thank you.
But that is, you know, with the flat salary cap, yep, with free agency, with the expansion draft, they are going to lose some players.
But they're going to protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goalie. You don't think they'll do the 8-1?
I honestly have given zero brain power to that thought because it's a lot of things could have changed, sure, between the beginning of the year and now. Things could still change between the end of the year and now, especially when it comes to maybe some contract situations. I don't know what the Hurricanes will do just yet. I'll dive into that as it gets closer to the expansion draft. But the Seattle Kraken are going to take a player from every team.
Yes.
And, you know, whoever it is, you hope they do well in Seattle. Maybe not in the 2 games against the Hurricanes that they'll see them. The Hurricanes, I'm sure, obviously are going to have some decisions to make in the offseason. When you look at Dougie Hamilton, Andrei Svechnikov, both do new contracts. Svechnikov is an RFA, so that's a different situation. Then you look at the goaltending, Peter Mrazek, James Reimer, both UFAs. Alex Nedeljkovic is going to be an RFA, so there are some decisions to make. But I think, John, I think when you look at the roster at large, the core players are pretty much intact. The team next year is not going to look totally different from the team you've seen this year.
Yeah, as Michael just said, to back it up, and I'm glad that you hit on the one point. I was going to say the core players are going to be protected.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to sit there going, are they going to lose Sebastian Aho? No, they're not. They're not going to lose any of the core to this draft. They might lose a really good player, a regular.
Yeah.
And if you look at the organization, you know, your eyes can go to the defense. That would probably be a position that they'll lose. But here's one good thing. They don't have to protect Martin Natchez because he was put in the minors the year before, where he's not eligible for this upcoming expansion draft. This team has done its due diligence. Again, they know they're going to lose a good player. Odds are, unless there's something behind the scenes where they trade a draft pick, it's kind of what they did with Vegas. Remember, people, if you ask them, who did the Hurricanes lose to the Vegas Golden Knights in the expansion draft?
Connor Brickley.
So, and that was done because you do deals behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So a lot
can change between now and then. And now that Seattle, as of last week, I believe it is, or 2 weeks ago, is now an official member of the National Hockey League, they can start wheeling and dealing.
Yep.
So you might see some deals happen, you know, especially as we get closer to the expansion draft, which is 2 months away.
Sure.
All right. Let's take another call.
Hey, guys, this is Jack from D.C., and I wanted to give a shout-out, an end-of-the-season shout-out, to an unsung hero on the Carolina Hurricanes, and that is backup goalie James Reimer. This is a guy that was drafted by Toronto in 2006 in the fourth round. And what has he done in a backup role with the Hurricanes? For his career as a Hurricane, he's been 29-11-4. Now, this is a role where you're expected to come off the bench at any time. You never know when you're going to be playing. And he also had to fill in for Mrazek as a starter when Mrazek got injured. And you could say, well, the record isn't quite as important when it comes to measuring how well a goaltender has played. But I think in the case of the Hurricanes, he kept the winning going. And that's really what matters, I think. You cannot scoff at 29-11-4. So this may be all that James Reimer ever plays as a Hurricane, but wow. What a great job he did as a backup goalie. I'd like to know what you guys think about him. Thank you very much.
See, for me, if you're just going to categorize James Reimer as a backup goalie, the wins are the most important thing. He could have a goals against average of pie, and I don't care. Does he win the game when he's in the net? Because that's what you want out of your backup goaltender, to give your team the chance to win the game. Well, it turns out he was really good and has been really good. And by the way, I wouldn't count him out of the playoffs. In the first round, he's 7-1 for his career against Nashville. He was good against Nashville this year. I'm just saying the Canes have options with their goaltenders heading into this series, heading into the playoffs with all three of them. But you know, James Reimer, when you consider he was acquired for Scott Darling for a contract the Canes were looking at kicking the tires on buying out, and then they get James Reimer to come in and give them the quality performances he did, the wins that he gave them in his 2 years, absolutely. I mean, there's a stick tap all around for what James Reimer brought to this organization, and some just stability to the goaltending situation with him and Peter Mrazek.
Yeah, right. The Hurricanes have had really a wealth of, goaltending success, really, you know, dating back to the 2018-19 season when Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhinney really kind of, you know, shared the load. Yep. Down the stretch of the season, Peter Mrazek gets hot, obviously plays well during the playoffs. Again, you need both goalies. The Hurricanes using both goalies in the playoffs last year. You've seen this year the Hurricanes using three goaltenders, so they have options, and they've had options, and they've all played really well. Peter Mrazek, James Reimer, Curtis McElhinney, Alex Nedeljkovic, and James Reimer's a very big piece of that puzzle. And yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, you go into this playoffs, and you don't want to see it, but there's a chance that somebody could get hurt, James Reimer will be called upon. So he's played a huge part of the goaltending picture for this team.
Sure.
And that move to acquire him from Florida was I don't know if you can call it underrated.
I think so.
But, yeah.
Because I think at the time people looked at it and went, okay.
Interesting. Yeah, exactly. And it's turned out to be a move that has really benefited this team quite a bit.
Hey, Mike and Michael. I'm just calling to actually comment on a call from last week where someone was talking about if we won the President's Trophy, would there be a course or whatnot. This method actually always bothered me because when you actually look at the numbers, about 25% of the time, the team that wins the President's Trophy also wins the Stanley Cup. So it's not common because everyone knows the playoffs are their own separate things. But it's happened like 4 or 5 times since the year 2000. So I don't understand how it's a myth when, you know, most hockey fans will live to see it done. Anyways, that was all. Moi moi.
First off, really good call.
It makes a great point.
And I think the reason why it's such a big deal, why it, like, everything gets made into a big deal, is if you're the best team in the regular season, everybody expects you to win the tournament to be the champion. And a lot of teams throughout history in sports are built for the regular season, but when it comes to a tournament, might not be built for that. This is going to be very painful to our good friend, the great Pace Sagister. But the Atlanta Braves of the 90s were built for 162. But when it came time for the playoffs, there were other teams that were better suited for a shorter series, as great as that rotation was. There have been some teams, and a lot of times you go in 8-1 matchup, you look at it, you're like, we're better than this team. You know, our roster, we have all-stars, we have Hall of Famers. Back in the days before the salary cap, you know, our first line is more than this entire team. We should win. You look at that, and sometimes if, especially in hockey, if you're overconfident, if you don't have that full respect for the opponent, you can get beat. Because once you start chasing the game, it becomes a problem. Plus, the biggest X factor for me in hockey is the goaltender. Because goalies steal series.
Yeah.
Because a goalie can get into the other team's head.
Yeah. And it's, you know, going back to the attention giving to the President's Trophy winner, it comes down to sheer numbers, right? There's one President's Trophy winner. There are 15 other teams that make the playoffs. The odds, even though that one team is the best, you have 15 other teams who could potentially win the Stanley Cup. You know, there's not a trophy given to the team that finishes third in the division. You know, they might have had a great year. They don't end up with the President's Trophy, but they end up with the Stanley Cup. Look at the Hurricanes this year. They're not going to end up with the President's Trophy, but they may very well end up with the Stanley Cup because they're a really good team. And then it becomes, oh, well, the President's Trophy winner, whether that's Vegas or I don't know if Colorado still has a shot at it, but, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, President's Trophy winner didn't win again. It's probably cursed. But, I mean, they're just other good teams. They just didn't happen to win the President's Trophy. So, yeah, I think you make a good point. It's when you look at the numbers themselves, they're actually a decent amount of number one seeds that do end up winning the Stanley Cup.
The President's Trophy was handed out for the first time at the end of the 86 season. So it's been handed out 34 times. Hasn't been handed out yet, right?
Don't ask me to do that math.
So it's we're just going to go with that. Eight times the team that won the President's Trophy or had the best regular season record in 34 years has won the Cup. That's almost 25%. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's when you consider the playoffs in hockey, there are 15 other teams. There are 15 other slots that can win the Stanley Cup. And I saw the chart for this the other day. I wish that I would have taken a picture of it. No other slot has won the Cup more than five times over that span. So it's not like, oh, you want to have the second best record or the third best record or the 15th. No, give me the best record if you can. There's this. Sure. The only problem is you look at it, the last time the President's Trophy winner has won the Stanley Cup was the 2012-13 Chicago Blackhawks. And then, of course, there have been quite a few instances, and this is where the curse comes in, of the team losing in the first round. In 1991, Chicago was the first team to do it. St. Louis lost it in 2000. Detroit lost it in 05-06 to the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
So that's a big one. Then the San Jose Sharks lost it in 09, the Caps in 10, and the Canucks in 12, and then Tampa in 19. So seven times you've had the team win it, get knocked out in the first round.
Yeah.
So that's where I see where the curse comes from. But, you know, I'll take my chances eight times, eight out of 34 of winning the Cup.
For sure.
So.
And, hey, you get to raise another banner for it,
too. There you go. By the way, good question.
Yeah.
Good comment. Good call.
Thank you.
Hey, Mike and Mike. Sam here. Huge Caniac. As is my wife. My 20-month-old son loves watching the Hurricanes as well. And we are about to have another baby, and I'm sure he'll be a Caniac as well. So I just had a quick couple things for you. Number one, I have the, if you like it, you can take it. If not, send it right back. I think the Hurricanes are going to re-sign Yanni Hakanpaa. I see no reason why they wouldn't. I think he's done pretty much everything that they thought he would. So there's that. And then the second thing is just to see what you guys think about this. So in the third game against Chicago this past week, Nikita Zadorov took it upon himself to take a couple of runs at the Hurricanes' more skilled players, and nobody really seemed to do anything about it. And I'm not calling them soft by any means because we all know that's not the case, but I can't help feeling that if that was another team, that somebody on the other team probably would have, you know, addressed it or at least gone after Zadorov a couple times or something like that. So just kind of wondering what your guys' thoughts are on that. Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Bye.
Well, thanks for the call, Sam.
Yep.
A family of big Caniacs. We love to hear it. Your first question, Yanni Hakanpaa. Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of depends where the Hurricanes roster stands in the next few months. But when you look at his contract now and you look at his contributions and, you know, you project another couple years out. Yeah, sure.
That's one of those things where if everything lines up right for both sides, numbers are right, he wants to be here. He seems to enjoy playing here. You have a little bit more contact around the team than I do, so it's, you know, hard to get the grasp of the locker room and how things are, but it seems like he enjoys it here. I think that comes down to, you know, right shot D, who is big and physical, brings what the Canes want. Can they get something done? I wouldn't be shocked to see that he stays here and he gets a contract. And plus, I believe he's an RFA. So
I think he's a UFA.
But it's a situation where you look at where he's at in his career. Yeah, this would be a really good fit. I think the team likes him. And again, balance. Everybody loves to talk about having balance and everything that comes with it. And I am going to do the little search on cap friendly.
It's also on hurricanes.com.
Oh, look at you.
And sorry, the contract tracker.
I just had cap friendly up, so you can yell at me later on that one. He is. You are correct, Michael. He is a UFA. I apologize.
Thank you.
And we move on.
Thank you.
To the second part of his question, which is Nikita Zadorov taking a couple of runs at the Canes. And look, that's Zadorov's game. He plays like that.
Yeah.
Has pretty much his whole career. He's big. He's physical. I think you also consider time and place. If you're the Canes, you don't want to do anything stupid where you get somebody suspended for 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
And so as, that's one.
As JD mentioned, too, I mean, there is an element of discipline to the game.
Sure.
There are things that happen during the game that, you know, we're not even privy to because they happen in between the benches, yep. You know, jaw-jacking with each other. And so, yeah, I mean, the game is a lot different than it sure. used to be. You know, there is a time and place for everything. Yep. And I think at that point, Chicago season's done. The yeah. Hurricanes aren't going to see him again this season. So
yeah,
who cares?
Yeah. Right? And Zadorov has nothing to lose by,
right.
you know, all right, if he gets a suspension or a fine right. of $5,000. Okay.
And the last thing you want is one of your players, you know, instigating something with him, and
exactly.
then that leads to a suspension or an injury.
Or it leads to a game that just gets out of hand because it turns into an eye for an eye. But it's the funny thing about that. I'm sure that from the Chicago perspective, there were some hits that the Canes delivered in that series that they didn't find were above board. You know, it's that always becomes a matter of perspective. I think there are two things that stand out, though. One, Zadorov had the history because it was his hit on Teuvo Teravainen that led to the concussion that sidelined the Canes' outstanding winger for 32 of 33 games. He lined up Jake Bean, then he almost did the exact same thing to Teravainen in that last game that we're all kind of looking back on, which, by the way, the Canes found a way to get a point in that one where they had 9 points in that homestand out of a possible 10, which is really good last time I checked. But it's so weird because this then turns into what do people want in the game of hockey? Because people don't want fighting, so what do you want? You know, do you get Tom Wilson then if you don't want fighting? And don't get me wrong, I don't want to make a weird stump speech here, but you don't want fighting, but you want people to get retribution. Well, how do you get the retribution? So you go after Patrick Kane then, and that doesn't do any good,
right?
So it's a weird slope to be on. And that's also something where I think the Canes, they'll remember the next time they see Nikita Zadorov in a regular season game, if he's in a Chicago uniform or wherever he is, and you'll go from there.
Yeah, I think that's good. Let's take, just got a couple more calls here.
Hey, Mike and Michael. It's Mike. Hope everything's going well your way. Smitty, hope your wife is doing good. I know y'all got about, 2.5 months left and getting down to the nitty-gritty with that one. Question for you is, are there any former Hurricane players that, for whatever reason, might not have played to their full potential under previous coaches that you think would flourish now if they were to come back and play under Roddy? And secondly, I asked Siri, I asked Google, I asked Alexa, I even asked my wife, and could not find anybody that has ever done this before. So if you like it, you can keep it. If not, send it right back. Rod Brindamore will be the first person to ever win a Stanley Cup and then later on coach that same organization to win a Stanley Cup. Love to hear your thoughts. Talk to you guys soon. Moi, moi.
Thank you.
Just had to. No.
Thank you.
There you go.
There we go.
Just had to get that one in there.
Yeah, as well you should.
One. Yes. Thanks, Mike.
He knows way more about your upcoming
we're about 2 months
spawn
away.
Of yeah, Smitty to be coming into the world.
About 2 months away.
He is, like, accurate.
Clock's ticking.
Evidently. Evidently, Mike has got the Michael Smith baby clock going on. Good for you, Mike. Way to be a fan of the show. Appreciate that. All right. I would love to say that Rod Brindamore would be the first head coach to do this.
Yeah.
He won't be. It's been done before. It hasn't been done in 60 years.
It's been a long time.
Toe Blake did it with the Montreal Canadiens, played for the Canadiens, and then he coached them to five straight. And Hap Day did it before. And Hap Day, yes, I did have to look that up.
Yeah.
So we used the Google machine.
Well, we figured, you know, before the show when we were just kind of theorizing about who it might be, we figured it would probably be someone from either Montreal or Toronto. Just because in recent memory, you know, we couldn't really think of anyone. And as far as we know, it hasn't happened in recent memory.
I was going to vote for player coach Reggie Dunlop. That was my official guess.
But yeah, we found some answers. Maybe there are more, but those are at least two.
Yeah.
It has happened before. It just hasn't happened in a while, according to our research.
Correct.
And we don't have anybody to check our research, so you just have to trust us.
Put it to our staff, and they came up with the answer, and that would be us.
All right.
Hey, guys. I know we should be done talking about Tom Wilson, but I really appreciated what Shane Willis was talking about, how it filters down into youth hockey, and that's my biggest problem with it, is that the kids watch it and say, oh, well, nothing's going to happen against you, so therefore might as well do it. I found that completely disturbing that nothing happened against him, and I really appreciated the comments on the podcast this week. Gotta like it for you. I said a couple weeks ago that whoever comes out of the Central would win the Cup. I'm going to take that a step further and say whoever comes out of the North will be swept in the first round.
All right.
Oh, I so want to take that one, but I'm not. Whoever comes out into the semifinals is going to win a game.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe two.
Maybe.
Unless it's a certain team from Canada.
Well, yeah, it's going to be, I think, a rough ride for whoever that team is.
You are, I think, correct. There is, I don't know why, because they haven't done it before, and I have tried to buy all in on the Winnipeg Jets in the past few seasons. They're missing some pieces, but I don't know. This is like one of these years where you're like, all right, I'm punting on the Jets, and then maybe they figure it all out.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But probably not.
I'm just, that's the one team from the North that I look at that I think could be, if they get it all together, could be the toughest out. And I know I am glossing over the Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers, who have the best player in the game.
Yeah.
What Connor McDavid did this year is absolutely silly.
It's foolish.
It was video game numbers, over 100 points in a 56-game season. And he still has games left to play.
The fact that he needed four in his last four games, I think it was, and then he just went it and got it in two periods.
Yeah.
Is silly.
Yeah, he is on
he's playing another game.
And the funny thing is, the guy on his team, Leon Draisaitl, if he was anywhere else, we'd be talking about, well, maybe we need to talk about this guy as the best player in the league with the numbers he puts up. So
pretty good too. Thanks for your comments about last week's podcast with Shane. I thought having him on was great, and I thought his thoughts on Tom Wilson were pretty accurate.
Yeah, they are. And generally, just one thing, and you're really going to get into this because you're going to have children soon.
Just one for now.
Well, but Mike chronicled that.
Unless there's something we don't know about.
And so, hey, but I generally, when I hear the, you know, for the kids message, this one is where it does ring true.
Yeah.
Where if a guy like that runs around and I just wish more people would understand this. If you do something stupid, there should be repercussions.
Yeah.
However, a lot of people in this country don't understand that.
Yeah. He did get fined $5,000.
$5,000? That's like going to your room and you're still allowed to play with all of your games and toys.
I get that. But we can't say nothing happened. He did get fined $5,000. We're stating facts. Should he have been suspended? Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, you make a good point. It's a fair point that, especially when you're looking at the youth levels, it's not a message you want to send that, yes, it's okay to grab someone by his hair and throw him to the ice.
No.
Not good.
No.
Not a good look.
And then it would be, well, you know what? If that happens at the youth level, we're going to fine you $5.
Well, they don't even make money.
But that's, I'm just trying to give, fine, you don't get the apple slice after the game or orange. I'm trying to give the equivalency to this.
Capri Sun.
Because it's like you said, well, there was something. It's literally like saying, well, you know what? You can go to wherever, but you can't get French fries or you can't get whatever. You got to get a glass of water instead of a
yeah. It was the maximum amount allowed under the CBA.
I know.
They should have been, he should have been
set. I know. All right.
He wasn't, and then and things happened. And
look, as far as Tom Wilson goes, he is a hell of a hockey player. He really, truly is.
If he could just figure out how to not be what he is.
Yeah, and I think that's where, like, where I wrestle with this, and I don't want to go into any further territory than I want to. I've always, when people say, well, how do you make this stop? We had a call earlier, you know, about Zadorov. Well, what do you want to do? You want to have Tom Wilson go after him? And then now we have this kind of war going on. It's why I've understood the aspect of fighting in hockey. Not the staged stuff, but the, hey, you took a liberty. This isn't going to stand. You're going to have to answer for what you did. I understand that, but not the running around crazy stuff. Not that. And I've always, you know, the last, you know, 10, 15 years when people talk about the game and then they talk about the shenanigans that goes with it. My thought's always been, well, how do you get it out? Well, find guys game checks. You know, if a guy loses a game check, CBA will never, the Players Association will never go for it, and I understand that.
Right.
But you have to make it, you have to make it where a player understands, this is really going to cost me if I do this.
Right. It can't be $5,000.
Yeah.
It's
got to be something more significant.
Yeah.
It just does.
Yep. All right. It's a good place to leave that.
And by the way, consistency would be nice as well.
Yeah. In many aspects of the game.
Yeah, but in how things are adjudicated.
Yeah. Nice word.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mike and Michael and all you great Caniacs listening. This is Steven, Steven with a PH, coming to you from Raleigh. My question for today is, will fans be allowed to return to Hurricanes practices in the near future at the RCI Center? I know that's always popular for a lot of the young kids and young adults alike, and as well as for autographed afterwards and photos and such. Anyways, love the podcast, guys. Best friends. And also, this podcast is brought to you by Stormbrew, which is official beer of the Carolina Hurricanes and of Canescast, at only 2.4 carbs per serving and only 97 calories. Anyways, one more, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, Steven with a PH.
Covered our last Stormbrew mention of the podcast, too. Well done.
Love it. Well done.
Well done, Steven.
Let me say this. No, they will not be allowed at Raleigh Center Ice because they don't practice there anymore.
That's correct.
It's the Weight Competition Center.
Yeah, Weight Competition Center.
I would have hated for somebody to go to RCI and be like, where is everybody?
Where's the team?
Why is the grass so tall here?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't even been over there.
I was over there the other day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tall grass?
Tall grass.
Yeah. Someone needs to mow.
They filled in all the potholes in the parking lot, though.
Well, that's good.
Hey, small victories.
Yeah.
I was in the area. I was visiting a fine purveyor of beverages that's now over there.
Oh.
Mm.
And there's some good restaurants over there, too.
Yes.
Anyway, we're venturing off track, and we know who's going to be upset about that.
This is Bill Bernstein coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
And we've been in our lane so long today.
So we might as well stay in it. So the answer to your question, I can't see fans being allowed at Weight Competition Center this season because of COVID protocols, yep. League protocols, all that. Next season?
Maybe.
Hey, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe still have to wear a mask because it'll be indoors.
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as we achieve some level of normalcy, which we're slowly getting there.
Yes.
So yeah, next season, maybe we can get back to that.
There you go.
Yeah. And thanks for mentioning Stormbrew again. You hit all the highlights, 97 calories, 2.4 carbs per serving.
Crispy,
delicious, tasty.
Plus you can get it for $5 in a 16-ounce can here at PNC Arena during the playoffs.
And that, you can't beat it. Can't beat that. So when it's game one, game two, of the first round, maybe game five, hopefully not game seven, but yeah. Hey, if it is, hey, 16-ounce cans of Stormbrew are still just $5.
It will, as I told you a few weeks ago, slake your thirst.
Yeah, slake.
It's a good word.
You mentioned that, and then I heard it again not too long after that, and I was like, oh, okay. Now I have a new vocabulary word.
Trust me, during the broadcast, there are times where it seems like I'm making up words, but I have a decent repertoire of words that I can turn to.
Well, there you go. Our thanks to Hurricanes assistant coach Jeff Daniels and Brooks Bratton from the Nashville Predators for joining us here on this podcast to kind of set the stage for Hurricanes and Predators, the first round matchup, which will start at a date in the near future.
So with that in mind, we don't really know what the schedule looks like. We do know that we're going to do Canes Cast throughout the playoffs.
That's true. Good point.
We just don't know the exact days they'll come out.
Yeah. So let's theoretically say that game two is Wednesday.
Yeah.
Perhaps we do a podcast on Tuesday.
Perhaps.
Or perhaps Thursday, even though that will be a travel day. So maybe Tuesday next week. We'll be sure to relay the information to you on Twitter.
Well, either way, because if the series starts Sunday, theoretically, which we don't know, they'd play Sunday, Tuesday. Wednesday is the travel day, so we'll figure it all out.
We'll figure it all out. It'll just bear with us, but we'll definitely come to you at some point next week with episode 176, breaking down at least one game of the playoffs, maybe two.
That'll be 100% correct. Well done, Michael Smith. Great to see you.
Great to see you.
He is the Web's Michael Smith, and for him,
and for TV's Mike Maniscalco,
we will talk to you sometime next week. Until then,
moi moi.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this podcast.
Go Canes.